If you could talk about the significance of this, whether you think it's accurate, likely accurate, and to what extent it's representative of at least some people within Netanyahu's administration.
So, first of all, let me say, you know, President Biden, I think, was famously said about Ukraine, or I think it was Secretary Blinken at the time, nothing about Ukraine without Ukraine. And yet here we are discussing the future of Gaza and of the Palestinians without the Palestinians. So I think, first of all, let's be clear that this is a discussion that should never have taken place without Palestinian representation. But second of all, let's step back and recognize that, yes, there is very clearly an intent here to impose essentially a new form of colonialism, a transition from Israeli colonialism to corporate, and I might actually be very clear and say Emirati colonialism as well, in the Gaza Strip, that segments the Palestinians into small, manageable groups. I use the term manageable, of course, very cynically, and then imposes these forms of governance that are undemocratic, that are autocratic, and that allow for companies to come in and take profits, for countries to come in and gain strategic advantage. It is, again, I think, very troubling. But let's also note that we are seeing that plan already being implemented. This isn't just something that is being discussed for the future. This is the purpose of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, the GHF, so-called, at which over 1,000 Palestinians have been killed at their sites, is precisely to start building towards this plan, first with American mercenaries and then to transition to other countries.
I mean, if you could just tell us, where do you think negotiations stand? I mean, to the extent that Palestinians are involved anywhere they are involved in those negotiations, and Hamas has reportedly accepted a ceasefire and hostage deal proposal put forward by Qatar and Egypt, but Israel has yet to respond.
So I think, you know, as has been the case throughout the last couple of years, this ultimately remains a question of Benjamin Netanyahu's political interest. Indeed, it's been reported in the last week that even senior IDF officials have turned to Mr. Netanyahu and said, stop, there's no more benefit, quote-unquote, to be gained. We are continuing to put at life the risks of our own hostages who are in Gaza. And yet, Mr. Netanyahu refuses to move forward on any sort of lasting ceasefire. And so we remain where we are, until he sees that it is in his own interest to do so. And that is just, first of all, unconscionable at an individual level, but also disastrous, I think, not only for the people of Gaza, but for the country of Israel and for the United States in its complicity in this.
Josh Paul, thanks so much for joining us. Veteran State Department official who worked on arms deals and resigned in protest against the push to increase arms sales to Israel amid its assault on Gaza. He's a former director in the Bureau of Political Military Affairs in the State Department, where he worked for 11 years. He's now a director at A New Policy, the lobbying organization he co-founded with fellow resignee Tariq Habash to press for a change in U.S. policy on Palestine and Israel. When we come back, today marks 20 years since Hurricane Katrina roared ashore in New Orleans, and state and federal officials left people to fight for survival in the rising floodwaters. Nearly 2,000 people died. We'll speak with Academy Award-nominated filmmaker Tracy A. Curry, director of the new five-part documentary series Hurricane Katrina, Race Against Time. Back in 30 seconds. NOLA Brass Band performing in the streets of New Orleans in 2005, in the months after Hurricane Katrina. Amy, before we go to our next segment on the 20th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, I just wanted to say on behalf of all of Democracy Now! A huge congratulations on the amazing documentary that's premiering this weekend at the Telluride Film Festival, which is where you are. The film tells the story of Democracy Now! From its inception and also tracks your remarkable trajectory over the last 30 years. The documentary is called Steal This Story, Please. So tell us about the film and how you feel as its premiere at Telluride approaches this Sunday afternoon.
Well, it is amazing to be here on this first day of the Telluride Film Festival. Thank you, Nermeen. We're really excited about this documentary that's premiering. And of course, you and Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez, who was there from the beginning, are featured in the film as well, as well as many others and the stories we cover, which, of course, is going to the title, which is Steal This Story, Please. The film is made by the Oscar-nominated filmmakers Carl Diehl and Tia Lesson. They are the filmmakers who directed Trouble the Water about Hurricane Katrina, as well as The Janes about an underground network helping women get abortion, and Citizen Coke. So the film is premiering this Sunday, and for people in Colorado and especially around the Telluride area, I want to invite you to the premiere, which is Sunday at 1 o'clock. It's going to be at the Mason's Theater, the old Mason Hall, still is, over 100 years old. It is where Michael Moore premiered Roger and Me, really thrilling. I mean, this is a highly unusual film festival. The festival is going to be honoring the Iranian filmmaker Jafar Panahi, who was arrested and imprisoned by the Iranian secret police in 2010, as well as 2022 for his filmmaking. I will also be part of a panel on Saturday at 4 p.m. at the Abel Gance Outdoor Cinema called Truth Be Told, Journalism and Filmmaking in the 21st Century. It's a special panel. Will include the great filmmaker Werner Herzog. He is flying in from the Venice Film Festival right now, where he just got a Lifetime Achievement Award. Ezra Edelman, Marshall Curry, these filmmakers, as well as David Remnick. A film has been made about The New Yorker, and Jacqueline Stewart. So again, the panel is Saturday at 4 o'clock, and then the film premiere of Steal This Story, Please! Is going to be 1 o'clock on Sunday. It is really thrilling. We're very excited. Also, there are other very, very interesting films here. There is a biopic that is now going to come out here, Deliver Me From Nowhere, an unusual biopic about Bruce Springsteen. And Bruce is coming in today. The film, he is played by Jeremy Allen White, and also starring in that is Jeremy Strong. I got to meet them last night, along with, and we'll be interviewing her soon, E. Jean Carroll, a very interesting documentary made by the filmmaker Ivy Mirapol on E. Jean Carroll. Ivy Mirapol is the granddaughter of the Rosenbergs, who were executed in the 1950s during the Red Scare. So I'll report on all of this next week on Tuesday on Democracy Now!, but I really hope to see folks at the premiere who are in this area and maybe are already at Telluride or at other places around the state. 1 o'clock on Sunday for the premiere of Steal This Story, Please. But let's continue on the issue of films, Nermeen.
Well, thank you so much, Amy, and congratulations again from all of us. We also should say to our audience, the film will eventually release across the United States. Just watch our website for details. Well, we spend the rest of the hour looking at the devastation in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Today, 20 years ago, on August 29, 2005, Katrina roared into southeastern Louisiana, tearing through the Gulf Coast with catastrophic force and gushing winds, driving a massive storm surge toward New Orleans. Thousands of residents were abandoned by state and federal officials, left to fight for survival in the rising floodwaters, many stranded on the rooftops of their sinking homes without water, food, or medical care. Efforts by community members to rescue their neighbors laid bare the resilient spirit of New Orleans amidst what became one of the deadliest hurricanes in United States history. That's at the heart of a riveting five-part documentary series by National Geographic, released just last month, called Hurricane Katrina: Race Against Time. This is the series trailer.
If you're still hearing us and you haven't left yet, please leave. I hate to say this, but I just don't have enough body bags.
The calmness before a storm is deafening.
As Hurricane Katrina was approaching, we knew this was going to be a catastrophe.
I didn't want to leave because I didn't know what we was going to be coming back to. I just was praying.
People won't realize how big Katrina was.
It's too big to turn. It's gonna hit us.
It's not a normal hurricane. Something wrong.
And my heart just sank. We have a breach in a levee.
We have rain inside the Superdome. I repeat, rain inside the dome.
3 minutes, it went from the ground to the roof.
A lot of people suffered, and a lot of people suffered needlessly.
Just let me know y'all living, you heard me?
People coming out of one bad situation, but they didn't know they was coming to another hell.
We expected FEMA to come in, but there was no help.
I told the guys, go find whatever boat you can find. We went and did what we had to do to try to save people's lives.
This community was not wanting to go out and just loot. There was people trying to survive.
You got a governor. What is they doing? It's seriously.
That's not something you ever want to do, to tell the troops to shoot civilians. Governor, that's your people.
They just let us down. To them, we wasn't even human no more. But people from New Orleans, we knew how to survive.
And this is supposed to be the greatest country on the planet.
In order to prevent something, you got to understand why it happened in the first place.
There is a house and you all the
For more, we're joined by Tracy A. Curry, the Academy Award-nominated director of this acclaimed new documentary series by National Geographic, Hurricane Katrina: Race Against Time. All episodes are now streaming on Disney Plus and Hulu. Tracy Curry is also the co-director and producer of the Oscar-nominated documentary Attica with legendary filmmaker Stanley Nelson. Tracy, welcome to Democracy Now! It is truly astounding, this documentary series. I watched it on Hulu just a few days ago. It was a beautiful day in New York. By the end of it, I thought it was raining. I thought the waters were rising. This inexorable move toward disaster. You have captured something like I've seen no one else capture it. And I wanted you to start off by talking about the systemic failure. This isn't just a natural disaster of the rising waters. This is an absolutely catastrophic government failure. If you can talk about, everything leading up to it and the level that racism played in the response to those who suffered and died, almost 2,000 people.
Yeah, Amy, first of all, thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here. I think one of the things that we really wanted to show in the film is that it really wasn't the storm itself, that the storm, in fact, was sort of a catalyst that revealed and exacerbated, as you said, all of these sort of pre-existing systemic and structural failures that had actually been failing people long before the storm ever came. And the storm comes along and sort of rips away any sort of sense that there was safety and protection for these people. And so part of what we try to do with the film is every episode peels back another layer, another layer, another layer of those broken systems that failed people during Katrina. So in the first episode, we understand that this is actually an environmental justice story and the destruction of the natural environment that caused a vulnerability for the people of New Orleans when Katrina came. And then we get into what we know is the failure of the man-made barrier, the levee system that the Army Corps, that the government was responsible for building in a way that made it vulnerable to the floods. Then we sort of pull back the media systems and institutions and how those failed people. And then we kind of pull back the state violence that people were subjected to. And from there, we sort of get into the story about housing policy and again, pre-existing racial disparities in housing policy really informed who was able to come back and recover and restore their lives after the storm. So the, really, we go into all of these many, many levels of systemic and institutional failures that, again, pre-existed the storm, but the storm comes along and exposes and exacerbates all those things to create, as we hear Malik Rahim say, a disaster that became a catastrophe.
Well, your film, Tracy, is not only very, very informative, of course, and powerful, it's also absolutely beautifully filmed and compiled. So let's go. We'd like to show another clip from the documentary. Again, the title is Hurricane Katrina, Race Against Time. In this clip, we hear from Ed Bush, who was a Louisiana National Guard major during Katrina, and Shelton Alexander, a spoken word poet from St. Bernard Parish, who filmed his experience sheltering inside the Superdome. His footage was weaved into the documentary.
There is no comms. And since the loudspeaker system didn't work, I walked around the 30,000 people in the Superdome to let them know we're working on it. I think it's going to be buses and we're going to bring, I don't know how it's all going to work, but buses are coming.
It did uplift our spirits. And so I was watching people settle beefs and shaking hands, you know what I mean? The place started getting real trashy. So a lot of the teenagers, they started coming together and they started cleaning up.
There was a young man pushing around one of those hotel luggage carts with a person laying on it. And he said, "Hey, this lady just passed out. What do you want me to do with her?" And she was okay, but and she was conscious, but she was clearly overheated. And I said, can you roll her to the medical center? It's right down there. And so he took it, and he came back about 10 minutes later. He's like, "You want me to keep doing this if I see stuff or I need people?" And I was like, "Please do." He loved that he had a role. The risk of allowing that young man to help push people to the medical arena was this much. The impact of other people seeing how he was helping was colossal.
Can I count around for service? Please do the film. We'll start in a couple of minutes. Can I count on around?
The National Guard chaplain will talk to us and he'll say, "What are your concerns right now? What are you thinking?" And people just, you know, would say, "My loved ones."
But you know what? All of my family is okay. And that is important. And that's why we have to pray.
New Orleans is a city that pray. And I thought he did a great job. And he as a man of God stood up there and he spoke to us and he made us feel better.
Even though we are uncomfortable, we give thanks that God sent this angel down to comfort us.
A lot of people started feeling like, you know, now we're chosen at this point in time.
Amen.
We're in this thing together. And before we get it even worse, we're going to get out of here.
That's a clip from the docuseries Hurricane Katrina, Race Against Time. The film also features stories from Katrina survivors like hairdresser Lynette Bouette. This is Bouette in her own words from the documentary.
And so I wanted to come back into the community and do what I had to do. And I was not going to stop until I got back to where I intended to be back in 2005. Every penny I have made since Katrina has gone into me getting back into my salon and my property. It's mine. And like I told the people that rode home, you will have to prime out of my wrinkled up little brown hands to get it.
So, Tracy Curry, those are a couple of clips from your docuseries. So if you could tell us some of the personal stories, the interviews you do with survivors, Malik Rahim, who Democracy Now! Has also, Amy Goodman has also spoken to at length, and others, the personal stories you got of the hurricane and how people survived.
Well, one of the things that I and the producers that I work with learned early on, we made some early visits to New Orleans before we ever started filming anything, really just to listen and hear what people had to say. And one of those conversations was with General Russell Honoré, who you see in the film, who sort of comes in and finally begins to kind of wrangle things so things start moving. And one of the things that he told us, and General Honoré knows Katrina better than most, is that his understanding is of what Katrina was, is that it's what you experienced, where you were, where you stood in it at the time. And so that really informed our understanding that there isn't just a Katrina story. There are many Katrina stories, as many Katrina stories as there are Katrina survivors. And so what we really set out to do was to collect as many different parts and pieces of that story as we possibly could to begin to make something that felt like a whole telling of what happened and to center the experience of those stories and the people that lived it. And so we really set out to understand what it was to be in the Superdome, as we heard the clip with Shelton and Ed, what it was to be trapped in your attic. And we spoke to Lucretia Phillips. You played the clip from Ms. Lynette Bouette, who was stranded on the interstate highway. We spoke to someone who was inside of the convention center. We spoke, as you mentioned, to Malik Rahim, who, while he was across the river in a part of the city that did not flood, was experiencing racialized violence as a result of the vulnerabilities and people being exposed and lived where there was also police violence that was happening to an unarmed man in Algiers. So we really tried to get as many parts of what it was, this sort of basket of experiences that we all kind of understand collectively under Katrina, that, as I said, really is not, it was the name of the storm, but really is not about the storm at all. It was about all of these other ways that the storm revealed and, as I said, exacerbated the vulnerabilities that people were living with at the time. And so we really tried to ground that in the experience of the people who really lived it and restore the narrative and the story to them.
I mean, the story of the government malfeasance. I mean, when you have the former FEMA director, right, who famously said he didn't realize people were in the convention center. I mean, so shocking when thousands of people were there. When you had, and then of course you think about the level of experience these people had in dealing with catastrophes as opposed to political appointees. And the level of racism, those who got saved and those who different didn't. If you can talk about, I mean, a changed city, why this isn't just about 20 years ago. The demographics change with so many African-Americans left New Orleans. People didn't even know where they were going. As they got on planes, they wouldn't even be told that it became a whiter city. All the teachers fired at the beginning. It was so astounding. And then it becomes a prototype for the charter school system in the United States, an entire charter system replacing the public schools, Tracy.
Yeah, and one of the things, I'm really glad that you mentioned that thing about the public school, because there's so many levels and layers to which Katrina transformed the city irreparably. And one of the things about the firing of the public school teachers is that when you think about who made up a large population of those teachers, it was black women. And I spoke to someone who we didn't end up putting in the film, but she was one of those teachers. And now 20 years later, when she should be living comfortably in her retirement, she's still having to work because her pension that she would have gotten as a retired teacher was cut in half when the school system was thrown out, as were the teachers. And so there are just all these levels and layers that were not necessarily apparent at the time to the ways that Katrina has just really transformed people's lives. We spoke, as I said, to Malik, who I know you guys know well, at Democracy Now! Started this organization, Common Ground, that was doing environmental remediation work and health care. Another person in our series, Alice Kraft, while living in a FEMA trailer, started a health clinic for people in the lower Ninth Ward. And one of the things they tell us is that there was a huge mental health crisis. This was a profound trauma for everybody that experienced it. And there was never any sort of healing for that. And so they're just what you're sort of getting at, I think, there, Amy, is just all of these sort of levels and layers of lasting harm that were done as a result of this that I don't think were quite apparent. And even 20 years later, I don't think are quite apparent in how this city has been irreparably changed. I talked early on to a lot of the people when we were just sort of listening to what people had to say. And what they told me is that, you know, for those of us who go to New Orleans as visitors, it feels like the New Orleans that we know or the New Orleans of our imagination. We do the Mardi Gras, the Bourbon Street, the jazz festivals. But for them, which is to say the people who are of this place and lived it, they experienced this bifurcated experience of New Orleans that they describe as before Katrina and after Katrina. And so much of what that after was like is that these very close ties of kinship and community that really defined life in New Orleans for the people who lived there were rent apart by Katrina in a way that was never knit together. I mean, the people were kind of called refugees, and there was all this sort of othering language that was used to describe them. But really what they were was internally displaced people. And many of those people never, ever, ever came back. So this was just an absolutely transformative event in the lives of these people and this city, and continues to be to this day.
Well, Tracy A. Curry, I just want to congratulate you on the series. Tracy is the Academy Award nominated director of the acclaimed new documentary series, Hurricane Katrina, Race Against Time, now streaming on Disney and Hulu. And that does it for this show. Special thanks to our local crew here in Telluride, Greg Cairns and Stash Wislocki and Patrick Dyer and Dallas Sainsbury and Dennis Moynihan. Special thanks also to everyone at the Telluride Film Festival who helped make this broadcast possible, and to Telluride's community radio station, KOTO FM, that has broadcast Democracy Now! For so many years. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, Augusta Messiah Rhodes. I hope to see folks Sunday at 1 at the premiere of the Democracy Now! Documentary, Steal This Story, Please, at the Mason Theater here in Telluride. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen.
Thank you. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Radio. It's Burnaby.
With Canada's health system under strain, going digital can help heal our healthcare. From virtual visits for everyday concerns to faster, more accurate diagnostics powered by AI. Technology is transforming care. Digital Health Canada supports the people and innovations behind this change. Learn more at digitalhealthcanada.com and subscribe to our podcasts.